Marin. It's 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition.
So when I put my hand on the Bible, I will swear to not only uphold the laws of our land, I will swear to uphold the honor and dignity of the office to which I have been elected. So help me God.
All right, now let me do this.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, lurking conservatives. How are you, liberal haters? How are you, liberals who hate? How are you, people? How are you, Mark Riley?
I'm doing great.
It's Halloween. It was pretty interesting to hear our president talk about integrity and restoring the presidential office back to its place in the world when clearly that isn't happening. But we'll get into that in a second. Couple of things going on. It is Halloween. What's Vivica dressing up as tonight?
A vampire.
Oh,
she is dressed up. She had a Halloween party over the weekend. Her best friend is over at our house, and they're getting dressed to go to school because they're having a big parade.
Okay, well, that's very nice. I'm not going to be going out trick-or-treating. It's awkward when you're my age. Yeah, it's just weird when you're 42, you don't have kids, people get the creeps.
Bring a bag with you.
Just give me some candy. Come on. Yeah. You want some candy?
Yeah, hope so.
No, I don't think that's going to happen. I was trying to think about things that I did when I was trying to think about my childhood, and Halloween is my childhood. Can I confess to doing something I think bordering on racism?
What did you do?
I'll tell you what I did. I was in high school. I was probably about 15. Yeah, I grew up in New Mexico. And my friend Dave Bishop and I, rest his soul, he's dead now, actually dressed up as cholos, as Mexicans. But it wasn't just it. We didn't just dress up like as Mexicans. We did our face with the makeup. We did brown face. We did Mexican
what
brown face.
What time is the liberal confessional?
Yeah, I know. That's tomorrow. But, you know, the thing was, is like, I don't think, I'm trying to figure out what we were thinking, because it wasn't out of contempt. You know, I put a lot of effort
into it. Was it out of awe and respect?
I think it was, in some respect. Because these were the cool guys. These were the guys, because where I went to high school, it was predominantly Latino. And these Chicano guys had the run of the land. I mean, they were basically, there was gangs of cholos that ran the thing. So I think there was some respect there. But the weirdest thing was, is that we went to a party and a lot of people thought I was Vince Baca. It was this guy who I happened to look like in my horrendous racist Mexican brown face. I looked a lot like Vince Baca, and people were coming up to me, you know, sort of, "What's up, Vince?" I'm like, "Hey, man, what's going on, man?" You know, and I did this, and I don't know why I didn't see any problem with it at the time. I thought that we did a pretty good job emulating the look. Is that wrong? I mean,
you know what? I'm surprised the floor doesn't open up in the pits of hell.
Really?
You know, yeah.
That bad?
That bad.
But
at 15?
I don't know. Why is it that some part of me still doesn't think it's that horrible? Explain to me what was bad about it.
Well, you were stereotyped. God, we really should save this for tomorrow, you know.
No, let's get into it.
Look, you're dressing up. Okay, if you wanted to dress up with the look, but coloring your face has some very very strong implications.
That's the tipping point.
That was the tipping point?
Well, because we were talking about this morning, and I was saying there's not a whole lot different from, like, the white guy from the suburbs, the 15-year-old kid who dresses up and talks black slang and wears, like, baggy pants.
Right.
And you said, well, what if that guy, put any coloring on his face? And I'm saying, that's the line. You can't go over that line. You can't. That is like an icon of hatred.
I didn't feel like at that time, I didn't feel like the stereotype was as specific. For some reason, I was actually trying to look as Mexican as possible. I wasn't trying to be some mockery.
Okay, now let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
Because there are a lot of Mexican kids that were in your town.
Yeah.
You ever walk up to any of them and say, "Hey, do I look Mexican?"
Well, that's the thing, is that there was I do remember going to a party, and there were people that were, Latino people who were baffled and somewhat taken aback by my costume.
What did they say?
They said,
"Get out of here."
I cut you, man.
They were like, they didn't understand it. right, you know, okay. In retrospect, I know it was wrong, but I thought I'd share that. I'm glad I got it off my chest.
There you go.
Yeah, and Vince Baca wasn't a nice guy either. He was kind of a mean guy, you know.
So was he?
I do think still in my heart that I was trying to honor something, not trying to mock something.
Okay.
I really believe that.
Well, you know, Maron, I went to a Halloween party.
Yeah.
And I was asked not to wear the costume that I had planned.
What was that?
Hurricane Katrina. I had little homies that I was going to scotch tape to my to my gray sweatshirt.
Did you just say little homies?
Well, that is a actual
that's
item.
A toy. It's yes, a toy you get in the supermarket.
Oh my God! What are you, Nick DiPaolo? Maybe you should open for Nick DiPaolo. Oh my God! Hey, a couple things before we get into the hard news. I have to find a home for one or two cats, my friends. Because it's, by all appearances, it seems that I will be leaving at the end of this month, and I would like to find a home for at least two of my cats, which are not feral at this point. They are socialized. They understand humans. They're very cute. I'd like to give away one or two of the females. I'm keeping Monkey, the male, but Hissy and Fonda, I think, need new homes. And I said, if you split these up, listen, I'm reaching out to you cat people here in the New York area, the New Jersey area. Take a piece of Morning Sedition history with you. Take one of Marin's cats. And I'm telling you, they are socialized. They do know people. All right, now let's get into this. Libby, apparently Scooter Libby was on crutches because he had been politically castrated and couldn't walk properly. Is that what you heard?
Oh, well, yeah. It is what I heard. I would think now he's pretty much done. He's either going to flip on... his boss, perhaps?
We're going to let's go piece for piece for this in a minute. But right now, let's introduce the idea that here we go again. Bush is expected to not announce a Supreme Court nominee today. Some people are speculating that he's going to put a black wig on Harriet Myers and nominate her again.
Uh-oh.
That seems crazy. Most Republicans are confident that Bush will do the right thing by them and nominate an experienced judge with strong conservative credentials. They're talking Samuel Alito, Michael Luttig, those are the prime contenders.
Filibuster.
Filibuster. I guess that's what's...
Now's the time for the Democrats to get themselves something called a spine.
Right. I think that's what Senate Minority Leader Harry Reid said. If he picks either one of those cats, there's going to be trouble.
Any of the four that I've heard.
Yeah.
Forget about it.
Yeah. Now, can they pull this off? Now, filibuster, is Frist no longer empowered to do what he calls a nuclear option because he's under...
He can attempt to invoke the nuclear option.
Right.
He is from a weakened position. The person to watch on the Republican side in this entire scenario is not Frist. It's Lindsey Graham, the senator from South Carolina, who was one of the people who engineered the compromise. He was one of the gang of 14 that engineered the compromise that took the filibuster and the nuclear option off the table some time ago. He is now saying that Luttig and Alito and Batchelor, Alice Batchelor, are all solid conservatives and should not invoke the filibuster. I beg to differ.
Now, I guess Samuel Alito sits on the appeals court in Philadelphia. He apparently was the only dissent in a case striking down a Pennsylvania law that included a provision that required women who sought abortions to inform their husbands. He's a hardline conservative guy. Now, if there isn't a filibuster, how much can they hold up this process, the confirmation process, if they aren't going to use the tool of the filibuster? Can the Democrats hold this confirmation up indefinitely by prolonging the process of confirmation?
They can try to do that, but Lindsey Graham says if they do try to do it, the Republicans have the numbers to stop them. And
right.
Maybe they do. I don't know. I just think that this is the point. If you want to make the argument that the Democrats did not go after John Roberts because they were waiting for this second pick, they were holding this second pick situation in abeyance, now is the time when they got to get hard.
All right, well, this is going to be interesting. Maybe it'll come out by the time we get off the air. Sometimes these announcements are made in the 8 o'clock hour here in New York. We'll see. When we return here, stay with us. We're going to talk about Scooter Libby's indictment. We're going to talk about what the country thinks about Scooter Libby's indictment, and we're going to talk about the very real possibility that Dick Cheney is next. So it's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley. It's 15 past the hour. Stick around.
Morning Sedition.
It's just to wake up.
Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
I've heard about those people.
On Air America Radio.
Thanks. We're going to change the tone in our nation's capital, and we are going to restore honor and dignity to the White House.
Yeah, good work, Dick. Good work. 20 past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hey.
Just received a dispatch, a piece on the AP being picked up also by CNN that it's going to be Judge Samuel A. Alito Jr. He is going to be Bush's pick for the new nominee. He sits on the U.S. Appeals Court Third Circuit. That's in Philadelphia. This picture of him is frightening. As I said before, he was the sole dissenter in the Third Circuit's decision in Planned Parenthood versus Casey in 1991, which struck down a Pennsylvania law requiring women to inform their husbands before getting an abortion. The majority's decision was upheld by the Supreme Court in the landmark case Planned Parenthood versus Casey. Samuel Alito is a hardline conservative. They call him Scalito. He's very young, which means that if he does get through the process, the nomination confirmation process, he'll sit there for some 50 years. It looks like he's only about 45 years old. Got a cold look in his eye. Cold
Actually,
look.
55.
55.
Yeah.
Right, there you go. 2,000, that's right. 50 plus 50 is 100 plus 4 or 5 is 5. That's 2,000. You're right. Man, I'm stupid. All right, so he's from New Jersey, Riley.
Born in Trenton, went to Princeton. Got his law degree from Princeton in 75. Worked for Solicitor General Rex E. Lee. That was in the Reagan administration. Deputy Assistant to Attorney General Ed Meese from 85 to 87.
Oh, man. So he's had the real conservative whack job training, this guy.
Unacceptable.
Yeah. So
That's all.
All right. I think you're right. So we got to start the fight now. If Harry Reid, this was the guy. Yeah, Harry Reid mentioned this guy by name. This is a Senate Minority Leader, Democrat. Harry Reid said, if it is this guy, we've got to fight. And there's only a couple of options in terms of fighting. They can try a filibuster, which I hope they can pull off, or they can make the confirmation process heinous. But if this guy's like Roberts, or if he's a guy that that will just stand on his own conservative ethics or whatever he wants to call them and not give them anything, how can the confirmation process really stifle this this confirmation?
By a filibuster.
That's it, though,
That's
right?
That's largely how you stop a situation like this, and you just filibuster until they withdraw the nomination. And I got to tell you, if people don't want to see Roe v. Wade overturned, then that's what this is going to have to take. Let's not sugarcoat this. Let's not make it sound like the Democrats can find some way to weasel out and sit on the sidelines.
Uh-huh.
They cannot. They are going to have to fight this guy. If Alito is in fact the nominee, they are going to have to fight him tooth and nail, or Roe v. Wade will soon be a thing of the past.
Okay, let's shift over to I. Lewis Scooter Libby, who was the first high-ranking White House official to be indicted while in office since Ulysses S. Grant's administration. All right, Libby, as you know, last Friday was indicted on 5 counts, 2 for perjury, 2 for false statements to the investigators, 1 for obstruction. If he is convicted on all of them, he could be looking at 30 years in prison. He, of course, resigned. His only defense is that he couldn't remember, or it was a busy time for the government, or that it got away from him. Given that there are implications that Prosecutor Fitzgerald knows much more than he's letting on, that he's possibly sitting on further indictments that are ready to go, that for those who are saying that it's just perjury, that might be the case because Libby is standing in the way of the investigation by lying, thus implying a cover-up which could reveal a conspiracy, espionage, and if there's a trial, Riley, complicity at the highest level of government, including the president, at the very least the vice president, would come to pay. We would see that. How great would it be to see Dick Cheney in a courtroom trying to defend himself as a suspect of conspiracy? How great would that be? What are the chances, Riley? What are the chances that, given what we are assuming Fitzgerald knows, and I'll tell you, watching Fitzgerald was like watching some sort of legal savant.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, the guy, like the memory, the clarity, the pursuit of truth. I loved it. I got off on it. I couldn't believe just how much of this stuff he had in his head, just how clear he was in terms of saying that, you know, Scooter Libby. Could we hear that thing, Chris, that where Fitzgerald is talking about why perjury is illegal?
This is a very serious matter, and compromising national security information is a very serious matter. But the need to get to the bottom of what happened and whether national security was compromised by inadvertence, by recklessness, by maliciousness, is extremely important. And we need to know the truth. And anyone who would go into a grand jury and lie, obstruct, and impede the investigation has committed a serious crime.
Yeah, there you go. A serious crime. It's not just perjury, and it doesn't mean that there wasn't a cover-up, that there's clearly a cover-up, but it doesn't mean that there's not a conspiracy or espionage charges here at hand. I mean, most of the people, 55% of the public, believes that Libby case indicates, you know, wider problems with ethical wrongdoing in the White House. That's 55%.
Here's the problem that Scooter Libby and, by inference, Dick Cheney and President Bush face on this. The average American can relate very directly to the notion of lying to a grand jury. An American is going to stand up and say, you know what? If I lie to a grand jury, I'm going to jail. Why shouldn't this guy go to jail if it turns out he lied to a grand jury? They can make that very direct connection to what would happen to them and what should happen to this guy.
Also, they can smell stink. You know, I mean, the interesting thing to me, Riley, is let's not forget that Libby had four titles, five if you include former Hill staffer, which was his alias in the Judith Miller testimony. He was the vice president's chief of staff. He was the vice president's national security advisor. He was the vice president's top domestic political advisor. He has a seat on the National Security Council, and he was assistant to the president. That was a real title, assistant to the president. So by virtue of that, Bush is implicated. And to think that Rove got off is I think it's a misunderstanding. I think Rove is in deep caca. I think that, you know, that he just got off for the time being, but I think somebody's holding out. Either Fitzgerald's going to try and flip Libby to rat out either Cheney or Rove, or Rove's already cut a deal. But it seems to me that it's all pointing towards Dick Cheney in real deep trouble here.
Well, yeah. Now, he only mentioned Cheney three times in the indictment of Libby, but that doesn't mean that Cheney is not on the hook. And by the way, others may still be on the hook. The thing that surprised me...
hanging on to that Stephen Hadley thing.
I'm still hanging on to Stephen Hadley. Look, it may not be Hadley, but there's been some pretty widespread speculation that he's got other indictments here that he hasn't dropped yet. I was most surprised that Libby was the only one announced on Friday.
Well, I think he was very clear. I think Fitzgerald was very clear why Libby was the only one. It's because Libby was standing in the way. And this is a prosecutor. He's not afraid to throw journalists in jail.
Yep.
He's certainly not going to be afraid to throw an actual criminal in jail. So we'll see if Libby. We'll see if Libby snaps and decides to cooperate. We're going to have the iNews when we come back. Obviously, we're going to be talking more about this. We're also going to talk a little bit about how Bush plans to rebound from 39% approval ratings, the lowest in his career. 27 past, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Before past the hour, it's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. Looks like the AP and CNN is picking up the fact that Samuel A. Alito Jr., Judge Samuel A. Alito Jr. of the Third Circuit State Court of Appeals in Philadelphia, he has the nickname Scalito for reasons that should be self-apparent, is going to be Bush's new nominee for Supreme Court Justice. Harry Reid has vowed, promised to fight this one with the Democrats, either by filibuster or very prolonged and intense confirmation process, I hope by filibuster. And this announcement will be made by Bush probably when we're still on the air here at around 8 o'clock. Mm-hmm. So look forward to that. What is Bush going to do to change his approval ratings of 39%, which is really what he had when he looked like lost a deer in headlights before 9/11? This is as low as it's ever been. Before we get into that, I want to say Morning Sedition will return to O'Neill's Restaurant for our last live broadcast this Thursday, November 3rd. O'Neill's, it was great. You know, he's a great guy. It's John, right?
Mike O'Neill.
Yeah. He's got the he put out some salmon for us, some bagels and lox. There's muffins on the table. We're gonna have Lisa Lampanelli, Vanity Fair's James Wolcott's gonna be there. Probably be a couple other guests. That's this Thursday, next November 3rd at O'Neill's on West 64th Street. Come on down. It will be the last live broadcast of Morning Sedition. Here we go. Sometimes when you read the headlines, it can be tough to figure out just exactly what the mainstream media is saying. So luckily, we have an iNews 5000 Wi-Fi headline transmitter. Alameda. Let's kick it up and feed it some headlines. Can't read two things at once. From AP, Bush looks to bounce back from bad news. Translation, Bush to Syria. Duck! Yeah, all right. How about this one? Glum Bush puts on flight suit, rolls in pile of money. All right. From ABC News.
What
does that even mean? Who cares? It's funny. It's funny to picture that. Just him rolling around in money. From ABC News, groups balk at teaching intelligent design. Translation, group claims God forbids them to teach superstition. Not a hilarious thing, but a nice observation.
It's insightful.
Yeah,
it's insightful.
It's cutting. All right, from the Palatka Daily News. Where the hell is Palatka? Riley? Palatka?
Don't look at me.
I thought you had Palatka. What did they find out with Palatka? There's a room full of smart guys looking at me like I'm an idiot. I don't know where it is. I'm looking to you guys to figure out where it is. Palatka? Oh, my God. Halloween now accounts for more than $3 billion in annual sales. All right. Halloween now accounts for more than $3 billion in annual sales. Translation, U.S. profits from voodoo economics. All right, you know it's Monday. They can't all be genius. All right, here we go.
So when I put my hand on the Bible, I will swear to not only uphold the laws of our land, I will swear to uphold the honor and dignity of the office to which I have been elected. So help me God.
As we know, Scooter Libby was indicted on 5 counts, 2 for perjury, 2 for false statements to the investigators, 1 for obstruction. There it goes. How's that dignity and integrity going? Restoring that to the White House. But let's be frank, folks. Everyone knows that Bush couldn't run this country. Conservatives knew he couldn't run the country. We knew he couldn't run the country. We knew that he wasn't capable. We knew he was just a cheerleader for the neocon death cult. All foreign policy was being run out of the vice president's office in the Pentagon. Domestic policy was being run out of Karl Rove's head through the president. The fact that Libby was an assistant to the president before Rove was even named deputy chief of staff means that Libby and Rove are all on the same page and all like-minded in the conspiracy. But here's what I'm thinking, though, is the fact that Bush's numbers are back to what they were before he did anything means that he's been severely damaged in his ability to cheerlead. And what's interesting to me is what with the Dick Cheney compromise, with this leak investigation having these indictments, is that Bush is really powerless. And the thing is interesting to me, too, is also in the polls, a lot of people think that like 55% of the people think that Bush wasn't, you know, completely in on it. See, he somehow managed to insulate himself because of his ineffectualness and because of some people's, you know, retarded belief that the presidency still has some integrity to it.
Well, look, George W. Bush, at this point, what is it, Eastern time, about an hour and change before he names the next Supreme Court nominee, really is faced with two choices from his perspective.
Yeah.
One is to simply move on and say nothing, or to move on with a delicate mea culpa. I think he's chosen to move on without anything. And see, the naming of the Supreme Court justice is part and parcel of his redemptive strategy here.
What can he really do? I mean, that means
easy. What he does is compete for airtime and space with this nominee. He knows that once he names Alito, people are going to refocus their energies away from Libby and back toward the Supreme Court. He's going to get his conservative base, which abandoned him on Harriet Myers, back behind him again, and the idea of perpetual war will no longer only mean Iraq.
Yeah, but how long is that really going to go on for? Hopefully, Harry Reid and the Democrats can muster up some momentum. There's no indication that they can. I mean, they haven't done it in the past, but maybe they will around this, and we can hope that they do, to filibuster this nomination, to at least really make it an intense confirmation process. I hope that the media doesn't get too hung up with this. Obviously, there's bad news out of Iraq every day, and apparently, you know, what can a guy who's like at 39% approval ratings do after a scandal? According to some of the stuff I've read, you got Reagan when he was faced with Iran-Contra and Clinton with the whole Monica thing. What they did was immediately immerse themselves in foreign policy. But Bush can't even do that unless he's going to go to the moon. I mean, what's he going to do?
Well, Reagan did something else that was very smart in terms of dealing with his problem. He brought in Howard Baker as his chief of staff, and Howard Baker proceeded to clean house inside the White House.
Okay, there
he
you go.
He did a public mea culpa on Iran-Contra, and then he moved on.
Well, there you go. That's another thing that Harry Reid was asking for. He was asking for, you know, for Karl Rove's head. And I think that also, you know, in a fairly astute political move, this was on Sunday, Harry Reid also said that Bush and Cheney ought to apologize to the American people for their actions, for the actions of their aides in light of the indictment of Scooter Libby. All right, so... is that going to happen?
Expected about Wednesday.
What, really?
Yeah.
You think so?
I think Bush is going to have to extend an olive branch and say, hey, there were some mistakes. I mean, he's not going to come out and say, gee, I'm sorry, I messed up. But what he is going to say is, yes, mistakes were made, and what they're going to focus on is Scooter Libby being one person. And in this case, old Scooter's going to have to take one for the team.
But wait a minute. So, I mean, we know that it's neocon death cult policy to never apologize, to always blame. And not only did Bush and Cheney not apologize after Scooter went down, they heralded him. You know, Cheney called Libby one of the most capable and talented individuals I have ever known.
Yeah, well, that won't last.
And Bush said Libby has worked tirelessly on behalf of the American people and sacrificed much in the service for the country.
Remember what he said about Michael Brown?
Yeah.
Remember what he said?
Okay, all right, but he still barely apologized for that.
Yeah, well, he'll barely apologize for this.
We had to twist it into an apology.
Well, it'll be twisted. See, this is not his nature. To apologize is not his nature. You're absolutely right. But in this situation, the court of public opinion and the people inside the White House, Andy Card is going to say to him, look, man, just do something quick, do something painless, get it out of the way, and refocus America's attention on the Supreme Court justice, renewing the Patriot Act, cutting the federal deficit, and making those tax cuts permanent.
Oh, yeah, okay. So what Bush is going to try to do then, he's going to get to work. You know, he's going to say he's going to get back to work for the American people, so he's going to get busy behind legislation that will take our privacy away.
Well, this is all Patriot politics.
Act, right? He'll get busy cutting social programs and making sure the wealthy will hold on to their money.
Yep.
He'll get busy claiming success in Iraq.
Yep.
And I guess the only thing he'll do for all of us, as opposed to just the wealthy, is scare the hell out of us with this bird flu thing.
Well, yeah, and he'll do that, too, if he needs to. I mean, look, we're talking about here, and see, don't underestimate the reforming of his conservative base around this Alito nomination and around the, assuming that Alito is the guy, and I'm pretty sure if AP is reporting it, he probably is.
Yeah.
Then if that's the case, Bush has got a willing conservative base, a conservative base that really now is looking to say, look, we don't want to stay estranged from this guy. He's still too powerful.
He's the cheerleader.
Yeah, he's the cheerleader, and we haven't gotten everything we wanted out of
it. It's interesting that what you see here is an incredible, ineffectual president on his own that is open to being used, you know, by his base, and he's going to make right by them because they need to use him.
Yeah, and they need access to him. See, yeah. they can't risk that he'll be really mad with them and then turn around and start really blunting their initiatives or not favoring them with the kinds of access and certainly legislative initiatives that they're looking for.
What do you make of Harry Reid asking Bush, this is Senate Minority Leader, Democrat Harry Reid from Nevada, asking George W. Bush, the president, to promise he wouldn't pardon any aides convicted as a result of the investigation?
Well, it's a nice thing for him to say. I don't know whether Bush is going to take him to heart on it. I would rather Harry Reid have said, of the people that the president has put forward for the U.S. Supreme Court, none are acceptable. That's what I would have preferred Harry Reid to say. Now, he said it about Alito, so, you know, he gets style points for that. But the Democrats have to draw a line in the sand as far as I'm concerned.
Well, why can't they just all get on the same page and start talking the same damn points? Why can't they all say no pardons? Why can't they all say this guy's no good? When the hell is that going to happen?
Well, hopefully, it may be 8:30
by the end of
Eastern.
The day. I hope you're right, Riley. So when we're gonna continue this conversation in a moment. You know what's sad is when religious fanatics ruin kids, and that's not just by teaching them intelligent design, but denying kids fun. You know, religious fanatics are the worst. And again, not all of you are religious fanatics. I know some of you are good, decent religious people, but these dummies have ruined fun for kids. We'll get into that in a minute. It's 45 past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Hi, this is Phil Lesh from the Grateful Dead. One time, I was listening to Morning Sedition and Maron started riffing on the Bush administration. Then Riley came in with a slamming groove about the right wing's use of the media. Just when you thought it couldn't get any freakier, Maron broke into Scarlet Begonias. What a sick jam. Best show ever. Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, it's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. I'm Mark Maron, that's Mark Riley.
Hey.
Happy Halloween to yous. The principal at Underwood Elementary School in Newton, Massachusetts, said that he will honor the complaints of a few parents who said that because of the school's traditional Halloween celebrations offending their religious beliefs, they will not send their kids to school if it continues. Those parents went on to say if they see any students dressed as witches, they will burn them at the stake. What kind of person? I don't even know what religion it is, Riley, but usually if they are fanatic Christians, they're the ones that they're trying to get the schools to do more Christian things. But I guess it makes sense that conversely, if they see something as demonic or witchcraft oriented or pagan, that they would say, no, make the kids cry. Tell them no costumes, no candy at school this year.
Well, you know, this is a very strange situation because, as you very correctly point out, Mark, normally it's the other way around. You have people like John Gibson and others writing books about how the liberals are taking Christ out of Christmas.
Right.
And now you're seeing what apparently is a handful of parents. It's nowhere near a majority of parents in the school or whatever. It's a small group of determined parents. I wouldn't be surprised if they were organized by one of these groups like the Focus on the Family or one of them. And they jump up and say, they offend my religious beliefs. What those religious beliefs are, at least in the article we have here on Boston.com, doesn't seem to be all that clear.
It's a spineless school, apparently, that they'll just buckle under the pressure of just even one parent being snotty like this or being crazy. The thing is, really, if you look at the numbers, I mean, out of all the kids that dress up for Halloween, you know, when they're childhood, only a few become satanic killers. I mean, really, I mean, if you really look at the numbers nationwide, it can't be that many, you know?
You know, I don't know exactly what the deal is. I know that there have been various religious groups that have a problem with Halloween and have had for some time. I know, conversely, you know, the church I attend had a Halloween party for the kids on Saturday.
It's pretty harmless. That's the bottom line. I think that a holiday like Halloween has completely been gutted of whatever its roots were, whatever its significance is. In American culture, it just means
buy a costume.
Yeah, I get to go out and buy a costume and get candy, and we're going to try and get the most candy in the neighborhood. We're going to get, see this bag? We're filling it.
Yeah.
You remember saying that, man? Like, we'd have these shopping bags. You'd be like, I'm going to fill this up. I'm not going to stop trick-or-treating until I fill this up. And then you'd get, like, 3 inches, maybe, of candy. You'd be like, oh, I got to go home.
Yeah, but you know what's creepy? You know what's creepy?
What?
Halloween trick-or-treating with kids who are, like, 6 feet tall and whose voices have changed.
Yeah.
All right? Who are trick-or-treat.
Yeah.
Kids who are actually teen. And this happens every, at least for me, it's happened every year for the last few years. You get usually small kids, but then you get one group that's like, you know, the youngest one is like 13, 14 years old. And you say, what are you trying to break into somebody's house?
What are they dressed as?
The usual kinds of costumes. Sometimes they just dress all in black and figure that's good enough.
Yeah. Do you give them candy out of fear of your house being egged?
No, I throw candy at
them. You throw them?
No, I give them a little candy. Why not?
Too damn old.
Yeah.
Looking bastard.
Well, I give them apples. Well, see, when I come to the door, you know, if you kind of look evil enough, they sort of chill out a little. Trick or treat, please.
What are you dressed as? He just pulls a gun out. What difference does it make? Give me some candy.
No, that hasn't happened yet.
I don't know. What is the cutoff? What is the cutoff?
I don't know what the guy. That's the whole point. Sometimes you don't know.
Here's a couple of scary things. At about 8 o'clock, Bush is pretty much assumed to be announcing the nomination of Samuel A. Alito, Jr. He's a judge on the United States Court of Appeals for the Third Circuit in Philadelphia. He apparently is called Scalito for his resemblance legally on a legislative, what would the word be, on a judicial level to Antonin Scalia. He has been known to make some pretty heinous decisions in terms of the right to choose. reproductive freedom, that is. Alito was the sole dissenter in the Third Circuit's decision in Planned Parenthood versus Casey, that's in 1991, which struck down a Pennsylvania law requiring women to inform their husbands before getting an abortion. The majority's decision was upheld by the Supreme Court in the landmark case, Planned Parenthood versus Casey. So this guy is a hardline conservative. He is about 55 years old. If he passes into the Supreme Court, he could be there for 40 years. We're really relying on Harry Reid and the Democrats to filibuster this thing, to fight this thing with everything they got. I don't know in terms, Riley, of what we're ultimately holding out for by, you know, constantly, well, hopefully at least just once filibustering, but at least it'll keep Senator Dale Connor on the Supreme Court for a little while longer. But I mean, ultimately, in terms of what you're thinking, I know that you're still having a hard time wrapping your brain around the fact that the one you chose,
Maura Corrigan was not the one.
Yeah, so looks like someone doesn't get dinner.
Yeah, I know. I doubled or nothing, didn't I?
You did double
or
nothing.
That sucks.
But now, let me ask you honestly. Like, okay, so let's say we successfully filibuster and stop this confirmation. Then what's the best we can hope for? Right?
Well, see, I don't look at it. I used to look at it in terms of the best we can hope for.
Uh-huh.
What I look at it now is in terms of the Democrats standing up and saying, this is what we will not tolerate.
Mm.
Okay?
Yeah.
And that includes Alito. That includes Michael Luttig. That includes Alice Batchelor. That includes about half the people that were talked about after Harriet Myers withdrew her name. There has got to be a point at which the Democrats specifically stand up for Roe v. Wade, because that's what's at stake here, and anybody that tells you different is lying through their teeth.
Okay, and here's something else that's scary. Sylvester Stallone's going to make Rambo 4.
Oh, no.
Can you believe
I'm
that?
I'm going home.
But that's not all of it. He's going to make Rocky 6 as well. The guy is 59 years old, and he just made some deals to make Rambo 4 and Rocky, I guess, 6. Is it 6? I think it is 6. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, imagine that. He's 59 years old. What's he? Maybe he's going to fight George Foreman.
Well,
what the hell's going to happen?
He's going to have a little robot.
It's
going to be virtual Rambo.
I had no idea, though. This is the one thing about Hollywood, and this is the one thing about the way talent works and the way the business works. He made somebody, the first three films, those are the Rambo films, gross $614 million. So, you know, throwing this guy a bone is something that's going to happen forever. If he lives to be 75, eventually he'll be able to make another Rambo. It doesn't matter. He made that much money.
Couldn't he just direct? Couldn't he have been a script consultant? Couldn't he have done something on the sidelines and bring in a new action, perhaps maybe in their 20s, hero here?
Maybe.
59? That's older than me.
Unbelievable. I need somebody to, please, a good home for two of my cats. You don't have to take both of them. You can just take one of them. Actually, if I can find a good home for one of my cats, that would be great. I'll try to explain more of this to you later in the show. We're going to have a job listing coming up, so that should be fun. And we're also going to talk about, obviously, the new Supreme Court nominee, because that's going to happen at about 8. And we're also going to talk a little bit about Rosa Parks.
Yes.
And a little bit more about the leak investigation. So stay with us. It's 57 past the hour. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley. It's Morning Sedition.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hi.
Here we are. It's Halloween. Boo. Nothing? All right. Morning Sedition will return to O'Neill's Restaurant for our last live broadcast. Our last live broadcast is Thursday, November 3rd, folks. If you haven't come to one, come on down. O'Neill's is a great place to see one. There's plenty of room. The stage setup is good. He usually has muffins and rolls on the table, plenty of coffee. We got Lisa Lampanelli, who's a dirty, nasty woman. And we have Vanity Fair's James Wolcott. They'll both be there. We'll probably have a couple other guests. That's Thursday, November 3rd at O'Neill's on West 64th Street between Broadway and Central Park West. Morning Sedition's last live broadcast. In a moment, we'll tell you who the Supreme Court nominee is. I'll tell you right now so you don't run away thinking you're going to get it somewhere else. Samuel A. Alito. He is a judge on the United States Court of Appeals for the Third Circuit in Philadelphia. He is he's an ideological conservative. He is a judicial conservative. He is against Roe v. Wade. He is called Scalito by friends and people who know him because of his judicial likeness to Antonin Scalia. So that's that for now. We should be getting a real announcement about that at about 8 o'clock. This is from the AP, from CNN. Bush is going to talk to the people of the country at 8 o'clock. But right now, I just want to say, in lieu of the fact that we're going back to O'Neill's, we never have any security problems. We've got a bouncer named Neil who watches the place, and always the one security problem happens to be this little old woman who corners me at every live performance with her comedy writing. She gives me sheets. She always has jokes, and she's no physical threat, but man, it's hard to get away from her. And guess what? She's on the phone with a Halloween joke for the first time. Please welcome Fanny to the show. Good morning, Fanny.
Hi,
good
morning.
How are you?
All right. I have a suggestion for a two-faced Halloween mask.
Okay.
Half will be Lon Chaney,
yeah,
of the horror film,
yeah,
of the 1920s and 30s.
Yeah.
And the other one would be Dick Cheney. They're both scary.
Okay. That's a good one. I'm sure you got more. What else you got?
That's it for now. I didn't think I was going to go on.
Really?
To you.
Is this Fanny who comes,
yeah,
to the live show?
Yeah. Yes.
Usually
yes.
Got an arsenal.
It is I. Yeah.
I was really expecting that we would take up the rest of the show with you. No?
Oh, well,
I'm just so happy to hear you
so
say that.
Prepared, yeah.
That's all right.
I have my stuff, and you have some of my stuff too.
That's right.
I can read some of it if you.
Well, you know what? Why don't we save it for the live show, and you can come sit down with me as we always do, because it's our last live show.
Well, I hope to be at O'Neill's.
Okay. Well, are you doing okay?
All right then.
Okay, Fanny. Bye bye.
Bye.
Oh, she's so funny. Hey, have you seen her? You haven't seen her, Chris, because you don't even know the show. Can we get a mic on Chris here? Every time we go out to the live shows, she comes up and she literally will corner me with papers full of like written jokes after jokes.
Yeah.
They're okay, but she really wanted to. I was so surprised that maybe she was a little shy, a little timid.
Now does she write them out or
no?
It
looks like she types them on an Olivetti, like anti typewriter.
How she just said right now. She told us who Lon Chaney was, the star of the horror films of the 20s and 30s. She was just a young woman of 45.
Oh, Brendan!
She takes a hit. Oh my God!
Fanny's awesome.
She's something. But literally, there have been times where I'm sitting there and I'm like, what do I do? How do I get out of this? You know? So look, one thing else before we move along, I really would like to find one or two of my cats a good home in the New York area. These are good cats. They might even be okay outside. That's where they came from.
Don't let somebody take them and then put them out.
Oh, I know. Yeah, but the black and white one's a very interesting cat, and they both are able to receive affection, and they're adorable. And those of you who've listened to the show for a long time know about these cats. Well, they're no longer feral. They have feral in their heart. But they do know people, and they do they are sociable. There are obviously some changes being made on this show. I'm not clear what they are yet, but they don't include me in the same capacity that I am in now. And that change will take place certainly by the beginning of next month, maybe by the end of this month. I will let you know what is happening with that.
Wait a minute.
Yes.
This is the end of this month.
Oh, okay. No, I mean next month, November. I'm going to stay here.
You.
I'm going to stay here with my friends for as long as I can, people, but that's that. That's why I need to get rid of these cats. I mean, I could take them out to L.A., but, man, I got three cats there already. I can't have six cats.
Well, take them out and let them war it.
Yeah, I mean, I will.
Social Darwinism.
It's weird how attached you get to these animals, because my wife's like, why don't we just bring some back now? And I'm like, because I won't be there yet, and I don't want them to sit there by myself. Dude, can I say one thing, Chris, since you're sitting in here? I went to the gym. This belly dancing crap, you know, during...
It's still happening?
I can't take it. Dude, I
have to get to this gym.
No, but it's
you're
ridiculous.
Guest pass,
it's
right?
It's ridiculous because, I don't want to be a perv, and I don't think I am that much of a perv, but I'm on the treadmill. The last thing you want to do is think about being on the treadmill, and they're teaching a belly dancing class.
Are you wearing
right
sweatpants?
Sweatpants, I took them off.
That was a good thing to do.
No.
Anything under them?
Nothing. I think that's why they made me leave. Is that wrong? I mean, I tried to behave myself.
Maybe
but
the binoculars were a problem, too.
I need binoculars. They were as close as you, Riley.
Really?
I'm here. I'm
Ooh,
on the
reach out and touch belly dancers.
But that's the thing. Then it gets a little hairy. Yeah, but they're behind glass. They're behind glass. And I don't want to be intrusive because these are women exercising.
What are they doing behind glass? It's a zoo?
No, it's
a peep show.
The aerobic studio. The aerobic studio is in front of me where they're all doing the belly dancing class. And I'm on the treadmill with other men who are trying to be polite because I don't want to make them uncomfortable because they want to exercise. They want to learn this thing. But one of these women was literally dressed, you know, in those shorts that are really too short to wear practically. They're more like bikini bottoms.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And she was wearing those and folding them down, like making them smaller. Oh. And she was wearing a halter top. And I'm thinking to myself, what are you trying to do to me? I mean, if you're going to do this, look around. There are other women wearing the jingle jangle things. They're dressed in the part. At least if you're going to belly dance, wear the proper attire.
Is there a dress code? Did they make them come?
Clearly not.
Is she the only one wearing the yo-yo smugglers?
Yes. Yes. Whatever that is. I like it. I'm trying to picture what that means. But I like it. I couldn't help it. It helped my run. Maybe I'm saying this is the best thing you should have.
Did you talk to the other guys? Did you look over and be like, guys, can you believe this?
I tried to, but the guy next to me was playing. He was playing it straight. He wasn't going to acknowledge them or acknowledge that it was an issue. But I saw him get on the treadmill and just laugh to himself like, what am I supposed to do here? What is proper behavior? Because I think belly dancing is supposed to be seductive. Isn't that what it is about on some level? It is an entertainment, but it is a seductive entertainment that is sexualized. Am I wrong? Could somebody tell me?
I thought it was just like to lose weight.
Oh, come on. call me up and tell me what the hell belly dancing is supposed to be. 866-303-2270.
And come into the studio.
2270. It's very, you know, it's cute and it's endearing. And I felt uncomfortable because I couldn't help but look at this one particular woman who was not dressed properly for belly dancing. She was barely dressed, period. And I wish I could just thank her.
You didn't get her number?
It is a mistake. I go home and, of course, like, you know, I must have had a little guilt festering in me. You know, because I told my wife, I'm like, man, that's ridiculous. That belly dancing while I'm exercising.
And she's like, bring that into your house.
You know, she's just admit it. You know what I mean? You don't have to put on this little show for me. You liked it and that's it. And I'm like, yeah, I know, but it still was, all right, you're right. You're right. I did, and thanks for giving me the freedom to admit that.
Carmen Electra has on Netflix, I can Netflix Carmen Electra striptease. So apparently that's another way to lose weight and exercise, learn how to strip.
Yeah, but belly dancing is obviously good exercise, but I mean it's sort of like Kabbalah, the religion. You know, you can't remove it from its context. You know, without there being problems. You understand? I mean, maybe that's my issue. It looks like some people are going to tell me what belly dancing is. 866-303-2270. And before we shift to the break, I'd like to say that I was watching television last night, Riley, and I saw the funeral. I guess it would be a funeral service for Rosa Parks at the in the Capitol Rotunda, and it was very moving. My wife was crying.
Well, she's on view now in the Capitol Rotunda. People are coming from all over
the country.
It's
closed, though. It's closed. It's not. The casket is not open.
No, the casket's not open.
Yeah.
Now, they also had a service for her in Alabama that was apparently attended by Condoleezza Rice, if memory serves.
Yeah, she did. Condoleezza Rice was there and said that if it weren't for Rosa Parks, you know, people like me may not be where they are today. She
gave
Rosa
Parks a lot of credit. Condoleezza Rice and Rosa Parks only had in common the fact that they were both black women.
Right.
Condoleezza Rice has a very different view of the world than Rosa Parks had, and I wonder if Condoleezza Rice had been in Rosa Parks' shoes, whether she did not have just given up the seat.
Yeah. Well, you know, what was interesting is that her body was flown from Alabama, where it was for a few days last week, at the church, at the AME, the St. Paul AME Church, where she once belonged as a member, and it was flown by the first black man to become a chief pilot for a U.S. carrier, that's Southwest Airlines, to the Capitol, and she will be Lyon State at the Capitol throughout the day today, if you're in the Washington area or you would like to go. The service was fairly interesting. It was moving, and she is the first woman to lay in state in the Capitol.
In the Capitol Rotunda. And one of the things that Rosa Parks' passing has had the effect of doing is making the civil rights movement take stock of itself. And I think that would have been something that Rosa Parks would have dearly wanted to see.
Yeah. All right. So, and just so you know, folks, in terms of, you know, my future on this show, I've done everything I can. There may be something unfolding in the next few weeks that will continue to have me as a presence on the show somehow.
Like what?
So, like what's going to unfold or what would I do?
Well, what can people do? Can people, like, petition? Can they, you know, stand outside our building with, you know,
That hasn't been tried. A lot of people email our site, which, you know, I read, and I appreciate seeing it. But, you know, when you're asking me, like, are you serious you're letting Marin leave? It's Marin who's reading it. And I would say, yeah, you're right. That's crazy.
But it's a wrong email.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's nice to see the support. I'm not sure where they would email it. I guess Air America Radio for the general email. But I appreciate all the love, and certainly we've had a great time doing this show, and we're going to continue doing it right up till the very end, and I'll keep you in informed as to what is going on with the show.
It sucks
what
my part in it.
Well, Chris, I love you too, man. It does suck.
It really does.
Yeah, I know. But we've got a few weeks, and if we're careful, we can actually stay here for a few weeks.
Maybe. I hope so.
Okay. It's 17:18 past the hour. Stay with us. We're going to be talking about, we'll do the job listing. Maybe someone will tell me what belly dancing is. And I'll tell you one thing, folks. You know, we got Robert Greenwald coming on. He's got a new documentary out that I watched over the weekend called Walmart, The High Cost of Low Price. And I'll tell you something. It packs a punch, and we're going to talk about Walmart because they are heinous. They are, you know, they kill people. That's all I'm going to say. Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Join the Morning Sedition right now. Call 866-303-2270.
What?
That's 866-303-2270.
You don't know until you've tried this.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Damn good.
Morning Sedition Old Time Radio Players present this installment of Morning Sedition Radio Theater. Today we finally answer that burning question, what if everyone on Morning Sedition was a girl? Let's tune in now to Morning Sheedition.
Welcome back to Morning Sheedition with Martha and Martha. Later on, we'll have Joni K Street, Sister Milfington, and of course, Bruce Cherry. But first, it's time for Martha Riley's Bitch of the Week. Who's your bitch this week, Martha?
Same bitch it is every week. My ex-girlfriend, Tracy. She'll sleep with anybody. She even slept with our technical producer, Crystal Lo Presto.
Oh, let go of it. We were drunk. It didn't mean nothing.
I'm not talking to you, Crystal. You'll stay in that booth if you know what's good for you.
And that's Martha Riley's Bitch of the Week. Now it's time for the iNews 5000. Today's headline, Ellen DeGeneres finds new love. Ellen DeGeneres finds new love. Translation, Martha Riley's ex-girlfriend now sleeping with Ellen DeGeneres.
Crystal, stop laughing. That's not funny. Come out of that booth.
That's how it would be if everyone on Morning Sedition was a girl. This has been Morning Sedition Radio Theater.
All right, it's 24 past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley. Good morning. You know, we know things are tough in the job market right now, so we've decided to help out. We scanned through the Sunday Help Wanted listings and found this for our Morning Sedition Monday job listing. You know, actually, I got to tell you, it looks like this job listing was already answered. Are you smart and crazy? We have a job for you. We're the Bush administration, and we're looking for the perfect Supreme Court nominee, someone who has an impressive academic and judicial pedigree and who will still appeal to raw meat religious conservatives who believe that God created man out of Play-Doh sometime in the last 300 or so years. It's a delicate balance. We need someone who vigorously supports legalized torture, the oppression of minorities, the castration of gays, and a culture of life. Perhaps more to the point, we need someone who is unaware of the irony in that statement. Also, our nominee should have extensive experience in constitutional law without ever having acquired an understanding of the Constitution. The ideal candidate will have a firmly held and thoroughly deniable beliefs. In other words, no paper trail. Oh, and please, no paper trail of embarrassing fawning love notes to the president. If interested, please submit your resume directly to Focus on the Family. And if you are personally recommended by President Bush, take a hike, loser. So here we go. We've got him. We've got our guy. We've got Bush's guy. He's going to probably announce it in about 30 minutes here. Let me take a call, though, on belly dancing real quick, because I did. If you're just tuning out, I had a little issue at the gym yesterday where I was exercising on a treadmill in front of the aerobic studios where they were teaching a belly dancing class, which I mistakenly assumed was for me. Roxy in Seattle, fill me in, please.
Hey, guys.
Hey, what's up?
I have a couple comments. First thing I want to say is that listeners can email Danny Goldberg, the head honcho, at DannyG@AirAmericaRadio.com. And they can also do what I did, is they can go to AirAmerica.com and become an associate member, send a few bucks to show you really support Air America and its expansion and so forth and so on. And then write to Danny Goldberg and tell him that you sent money and you're an associate member and you want your Morning Sedition.
Well, thank you, Roxy. That's sweet.
And belly dancing was originally actually a women-only kind of competitive dance.
Well, so it had nothing to do with me.
No. It was in the harems or the marines or whatever they're called that was both exercise and to recover from childbirth and probably to stay in good shape to, you know, make your shake happy. But yeah, it was only women. It was not for men's eyes.
Oh, so now I owe someone an apology.
I think it's changed.
Okay, apparently it's just exercise, but boy, it was certainly exciting to watch while I was running.
I doubt they really. I really imagine they enjoyed your watching.
Well, good. I'm going to stick with that then. Roxy, thank you so much for supporting the show.
Danny G at AirAmericaRadio.com.
Okay, but I'm glad you said it, not me. All right. All right, Roxy. All right. It's 27 past. We're going to come back with Robert Greenwald to talk about Walmart and fascinating documentary. So stay with us. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, it's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey!
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. Momentarily, we'll be talking to Robert Greenwald about his newest documentary, Walmart, The High Cost of Low Price. You'll remember Robert did Outfox with Chain and uncovered the whole truth about the Iraq War. Both of those films, Outfox certainly changed the tone of the country's dialogue about Fox News. But before we get into Robert and Walmart, quickly, Danielle is calling from New York City to address Halloween and belly dancing. Danielle?
Hi, Danielle.
Hi, good morning.
Hi, what's up?
Hi, I've got one more comment about belly dancing and belly dancing issues.
Okay.
My high priestess in my coven is a belly dance instructor.
Wow.
And and so we would do, workout stuff before classes and before whatever, just, you know.
Before the basic rituals of the religion?
Rituals, classes, whatever, probably not so much rituals, but anyway.
What religion is this?
Wicca.
Oh, that's so sweet. And it's a big day for you guys, right?
Yes, Samhain. Samhain
okay.
is called.
And what are you doing tonight?
Well, yesterday I went to Tompkins Square Park, and they had this little dog parade where all the dogs were in costumes.
Yeah.
And there were prizes and stuff, so that was my big thing.
That was your big Wicca thing, to go to a dog parade where they were in costumes?
Yes, dogs in sweaters and dogs in costumes. They were so cute.
All right. Well,
anyway.
Well, thanks
anyway,
for...
So my high priestess, anyway, with workouts, and she, being a belly dance instructor, used to make us do... warm-ups belly dance style and also do belly dance stuff, including the guys.
Oh.
And that stuff is really hardcore.
Okay, all right. All right, I appreciate your input. That's Chris causing trouble.
Yeah.
But look, Danielle, I appreciate your call. We're going to talk about Walmart now. Okay, good. Here we go. So with news last week that Walmart is looking to hire younger, healthier workers in order to minimize its health benefit costs, it seems like a good time to talk to our next guest. His new film, which is released this week, is called Walmart, The High Cost of Low Price. Robert Greenwald is, as I said before, the documentary filmmaker behind such films as Outfoxed and Uncovered, The Whole Truth About the Iraq War. And he joins us in the studio this morning. Good morning, Robert.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for being here. I watched your documentary over the weekend, and I tell you something, it's mind-blowing. Let me put this out there, 866-303-2270. If you have questions about Walmart, Robert knows what he's talking about. In this film, you show just more than I ever assumed possible that was evil, and specifically, you know, how you were able to get Walmart employees to actually talk. These guys, I guess, all of them, all the managers seemed like they had this burden on their heart. How hard was it to get them to come out?
It was both hard and easy. The hard part was finding people.
Yeah.
And once we found them, there were those who really, as you say, really wanted to talk. We have three managers who between them have been at Walmart 46, 47 years.
Yeah.
And the reason the managers were so important is I didn't want Walmart to be able to say the rotten apple theory. You know, they always say, oh, we're so big, therefore we're going to have a few rotten apples.
Right.
What the managers do is they prove it's systemic, that it's policy. This is not a result of a bad person here or there. These managers on camera talk about going in and changing people's time cards so they don't get overtime, cheating them,
cheating them. And in the film, that's the tip of the iceberg. It's not just cheating them. It's union busting. It's a systemic policy to keep people under the poverty line so states can take up the health care costs, and they recommend that people sign up on programs that are provided by the state and cost taxpayer money.
The Walmart tax, we call it.
And unbelievable.
That's exactly what's going on, and it's a reason that there are a lot of allies on this one who are not conventional allies, but nobody likes paying the Walmart tax. So what I hope the film will be a tool that your listeners will take to go out and organize with and organize in a widespread world, because there's lots of people who may not agree with us on other issues, but on this issue, they're with us.
Well, you know, Robert, it's interesting because Walmart now has plans, and this came out last week. They're talking about opening as many as 280 new super centers in the next fiscal year, adding more than 60 million square feet to its total retail space. Now, some communities have fought Walmart successfully. Some communities across the country, including right here in New York. I mean, you know, there was a plan to open a Walmart that some city officials actually supported that got kind of stalled here. Is it only in large cities where Walmart meets this kind of resistance?
No, there's a very, very exciting story, and it's happening all around the country. First of all, there have been 200 communities that have beaten Walmart, huge victories that they don't want us to know about.
That's excellent.
And in the film, we connect those dots. But it's all over. We have a story of a woman in Arizona, Chandler, Arizona, Republican lady.
That's a great
gated community, mm-hmm. and she went out and she kicked their butts because she organized the community. And we have really a great opportunity to do that. They can be stopped, and they can be stopped by coalitions. They're communities. It's homeowners. It's labor. It's workers. People have family businesses. There are a lot of people because they're an equal opportunity offender. When they come into a community and they destroy a family business or they destroy the value of your home, they're not asking if you're a Republican or a Democrat. They're just coming in and decimating.
It's unbelievable because, you know, you watch some of this footage you have there. You know, obviously, you know, small towns have been dying since the introduction of the mall. But, you know, when you the way you portray it in the documentary is that Walmart comes in and it's literally like some sort of evil monster that drains the town of everything, of its life force. You have people sitting there talking about how, like, there used to be cars on the street and how, like, they resist the Walmart. They resist it. But now explain to me one of the things I found interesting. I didn't quite make complete sense to me because I don't always put things together. What is that trick they pull where they get tax money from the city, and then they build outside of the city limits? How does that work?
Well, there's two things they do. First of all, again, in the Walmart tax, conservative estimates is everybody listening to this radio station, your tax dollars are helping Walmart come into communities around the country. Because there are cities and councilmen and state senators and legislators who think Walmart will help, or more deviously, Walmart is now behind many of their campaigns. So when Walmart comes into a community, they will be given a subsidy roads, tax abatements, whatever it is. Now, how can the family business compete with Walmart, who've been given your tax dollars in order to come in, mm-hmm. number one? Number two, we have one story, and there are many, many more than it, where they were in a community and they had a tax abatement for, I think it was 9 years. Just when the 9 years were running out, closed, when they would have had to begin right. to pay taxes for hospitals and schools and all the things that make a city run, they closed the store. And they moved 2 miles away, just outside the city limit, so they would now not have to pay taxes.
And the store is sitting there, the empty store. You can't do nothing with it.
There are 370 empty Walmarts around the country with hundreds of thousands of square feet. And what's very important is that we can use all of these issues to go out and bring together a coalition of forces to really fight Walmart and fight the whole issue of corporate greed and corporate unfairness.
One of the things, Robert Greenwald, that kind of struck me, and I didn't know about this initially in looking at how Walmart operates, is the fact that they offload so many of their employees from health care. And American taxpayers end up footing the bill for the Walmart employees who are not covered by health care. Talk a bit about
yeah.
that.
It was actually the thing that got me going in the movie. Somebody I knew was hired at Walmart. I was asking about his health care, and he said, well, no, they make it so difficult and so expensive, I can't get it. However, and he said it very sweetly, these nice managers are helping me apply for state aid, so the state will be paying my health care.
Unbelievable. This is just heinous.
And I said, like, no, wait a minute. This corporation made $10 billion last year, and that's what they're doing it. And state after state now, these surveys are coming in. Again, by the way, this is an issue that cuts across liberal or conservative. We're paying for their workers to get health care, and it's in the billions of dollars. This is not a small issue.
And this is about them also keeping a majority of their workforce at poverty level so they can still apply for those type of programs, right?
Absolutely.
And then the bottom line is that with Republican agendas, with Republican legislation where they're going to seek to cut these social programs even more, it really lends to this whole sort of adapt or die kind of society. And Walmart presents itself on commercials as being a company that cares about its workers, that takes care about its workers. But the bottom line is they see the workers as completely disposable. This, literally.
Yes, absolutely. And let's talk about those commercials a minute, by the yeah. way. Walmart has this spending with these commercials, and they've got this Edelman PR firm that's attacking the hell out of me and the movie. They're spending $3.8 million a day. Now, that's not to sell goods. That's to convince us that Walmart is second only to Mother Teresa. So for starters, we say, you know what? Stop with the Edelmans. Stop with paying this money. Put it into your workers' health care program. And
right.
boy, you'll see a difference in how the public treats you.
And how much money do they spend if they see two employees talking to each other and suspect that they're thinking about organizing a union? In the movie, you document that. What is the process when they even get a little bit of a whiff of unionizing?
Yeah, we have several managers, it's quite devastating, talk about the policy, which is if they see two people talking together and they
yeah.
think they shouldn't be, they call it time stealing, by the way. Get that?
Time stealing?
Yeah, that's
time
what they call it.
Time stealing?
Yeah. They're
wow.
stealing Walmart's time by talking to each other. They immediately call a hotline in Bentonville, Arkansas, and they will instantly have one of the 125 private Walmart jets, which we have in the film,
yep.
fly out with a hit team who come into the store. They essentially do a version of a lockdown and start showing the employees these terrible propaganda videos. I mean, they're almost laughable, except they put people in a room for hours after hours, and they show them these videos over and over and over again. And we have managers on camera who talk about that was their job. They were there. They did that.
All right, it's 45 past the hour. We want to take some calls for Robert Greenwald, who is our guest. A new documentary film is Walmart, The High Cost of Low Price. He can answer questions about Walmart. If you have a story, if you're an ex-Walmart employee or a current one that wants to speak confidentially, we'd certainly love to hear that. It's 866-303-2270 is our number. And just a reminder, George Bush will announce the nomination of Samuel A. Alito, Jr. of the Third Circuit State Court of Appeals in Philadelphia as his next Supreme Court nomination. Democrats, we should filibuster. It's 45 past the hour again. Robert Greenwald is here, 866-303-2270, with Walmart stories to share or questions for Robert Greenwald and his new documentary, Walmart, The High Cost of Low Price. It's Morning Sedition.
You're listening to Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
Is it possible for you to shut the fuck up for 10 seconds?
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, it's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. I'm Mark Maron. It's Mark Riley.
Hey.
Our guest is documentary filmmaker Robert Greenwald. His new film, Walmart, The High Cost of Low Price, is powerful. If you want information about the movie or links about Walmart, www.walmartmovie.com is the place to go. I saw the movie yesterday. It's a scathing and well-researched indictment of Walmart. We got some calls here, Robert. You want to do it?
Sure.
All right, Chris, listening in Tejas. What's up, Chris?
Hey. Hey, what's going on, guys?
Not much, man. What do you got for us?
Oh, man, I got a really, really good buddy that works for Walmart.
Yeah.
And it's a really, really difficult situation. He's got a lot of stuff going on in his life, but it's like he's a human volcano, man.
No
kidding. You can tell he's holding in so much that he wants to get out, and I would really like to do something about it. I'm sure I could get him to talk to you guys.
Well, you know, are you talking about like in the next 10 minutes?
I wish.
Well, you know, I'll tell you what you can do is you really ought to take him to see Robert's film.
And if he goes to our website, we have a hotline for people who want to write in. We've received a lot of tips and stories, and we can try to put him up with some other people. Because, again, we want to organize around this. He's an individual.
Right.
There are thousands and thousands of others. We want to get him together. We want him to use the movie. If he emails me and uses your name, we'll send him a copy, our gift, and we'll get it to him so he can show it to other employees in the store, because we want to have thousands of Walmart employees with the film in hand showing it to other employees.
Did you get that website, buddy? Chris, why don't you write it down? It's walmartmovie.com.
Okay, I got it, man.
Okay.
And I love Outfox. Let me tell you, I can't wait to get this movie, too. You guys are saving what's left of America.
Thanks a lot, man.
Right,
thanks
man.
For calling.
Thanks for calling. Robert, I got a question because there's something that I saw. There's this memo that Walmart put out. I guess it was last week, week before. There was one thing about this that absolutely stunned me in terms of the changes in the way employers view employees. There was some talk about the fact that a Walmart associate, that's what they call them, workers, but it's an associate, who's on the job 7 years makes a lot more money than a Walmart employee who had been on the job for 1 year. But the fact was they were no more productive than the one that had been there for 7 years. And the memo apparently said something on the end, I'm paraphrasing here, that they are holding people out of the labor market by keeping people at Walmart for too long. I mean, what?
Yeah. First of all, let's be clear. That was a memo that an internal memo
that
the great folks at Walmart Watch found and got out into the world.
Yes.
I've read the whole memo.
Walmart
it's just,
Watch.
Yeah. It's one of the groups that are doing terrific work in organizing and helping people know what's
great.
Going on. It's another good website to go to. If you go to our site, you can link to it. But the folks at Walmart Watch got this memo, got it out, and it is in fact devastating because it basically says the way to save money. Get rid of people who've been working here too long.
Unbelievable.
Just throw them out.
Let's take another call. David in New York. How are you, David? What's on your mind? What do you got for us?
Hey, David.
How you doing, guys?
Okay.
I have a friend of mine who I tend to trust her opinion on most things, but she told me at one point that she understood that Walmart has a policy where they take out an insurance policy, a life insurance policy on their employees and require them to give them permission to do it before they start. But that policy does not expire once they no longer work there. Is this true, or is it just
It was worse than that, which was Walmart would get the money when the person died. They have stopped that policy, which again is another indication that they are susceptible to pressure. They can be changed. They are a company, remember, that's in this to make a buck. And if we cause them enough pain and grief, they will stop spending their money doing things that they shouldn't be doing.
Good point, David. Thanks. Our guest is Robert Greenwald, documentary filmmaker. His new film, Walmart, The High Cost of Low Price. We go for another call here. Jim in Atlanta. What's up, Jim? What
hey,
do you got
Jim.
For us?
Yeah, just curious. With all these allegations against Walmart, whether it's unfair labor practices or health care manipulation, whatever, has there been or do you anticipate any federal investigations?
Interesting question.
Yeah. Good question. There's been a tremendous number of various lawsuits by the states. We know at the federal level, it's a lot tougher to make that happen. Walmart and Edelman and their money is being used to give millions and millions of dollars to candidates all over the country. So it gets tougher at the federal level. Not impossible, but a lot tougher. But there is a crime wave at Walmart. And
that's amazing.
One of the things we want to help do is stop this corporate crime wave and the crime in parking lots, because they are a corporation that only is concerned with one thing, which is squeezing every nickel out of every person they can.
Well, the fascinating thing, thanks for your question, buddy, Jim in Atlanta, thank you. The fascinating thing to me, Robert, was, you know, you do this whole piece on Walmart and how meticulous and controlling they are of their employees and everything else, but there's literally, in almost every city, there's crimes that take place in Walmart parking lots, that it's almost like the karma of the joint is so evil that it's like a magnet for evil.
You know, and what's fascinating is this is a corporation, by the way, that controls the thermostats in every one of the 3,500 stores. And as soon as there's something they don't like, they say, oh, well, we don't control that. That's the local manager. We have nothing to do with that.
That's classic. Yeah. It's like always blame, never apologize. Well, the interesting thing about the parking lot crime is apparently they've got, you know, literally hundreds of cameras within the store itself that monitor employees and shoppers. But even if they have cameras on the parking lot, usually they're unmanned.
Yeah, again, what Walmart is about, it's about property, not people. And they're concerned, and a lot of the times the cameras that they bring in are used to check on union activity so that they can have records of that. And that's where they will spend any amount of money. If it's to break the unions, if it's to fight the unions, and if it's for press or PR, the sky's the limit. There's no amount of money. I mean, look, they spent millions of dollars. They did a video on me that they posted on their website. By the way, I think your listeners will get a kick out of this. They did this big attack video on me. Mm-hmm. We took their video, revoiced it.
Oh, that's
hilarious. It's on our website, and it now says, you know, where it
the
says
opposite.
Robert Greenwald should rot in hell. We now say the opposite. It's at walmartmovie.com.
All right. Walmartmovie.com is to go to find information. Our guest has been Robert Greenwald, the documentary filmmaker. Walmart, the High Cost of Low Price is the film. Thanks for your call. It's a very charging topic for America, and I'm glad you're addressing this, and the movie's great.
Thank you.
Thank you, Robert Greenwald. We'll come back. We'll have Morning Remembrance, and we'll talk about the new Supreme Court nominee and the leak case as well. It's 57 past Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Pleased to announce my nomination of Judge Samuel A. Alito, Jr. as Associate Justice of the Supreme Court of the United States.
There you go. 6 past the hour. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Oh,
moments ago, Samuel A. Alito, Jr., who sits on the Third Circuit Court, State Court of Appeals in Philadelphia, was nominated as George Bush's second shot at this. At nominating somebody for this position after Harriet Myers crapped out. Now, look, I want to make sure everybody knows that this is coming on the basically right on the coattails of Libby being indicted, of Harriet Myers going down. I mean, now we know that the media is going to be cluttered and clogged with Samuel A. Alito for at least a few days. Now, Alito was, you know, this guy is a staunch conservative. He's been nicknamed Scalia for his similarities judicially to Antonin Scalia. He's also a guy who was a sole dissenter in the Third Circuit's decision in Planned Parenthood versus Casey, which struck down a Pennsylvania law requiring a woman to inform their husbands before getting an abortion. The majority's decision was upheld by the Supreme Court in the landmark case, Planned Parenthood versus Casey, in 1992. But the bottom line is, this means that Mark Riley gets no dinner, because Maura Corrigan, unless the Democrats do what they're supposed to do, which is filibuster this guy right out of this nomination or fight it to the death, Mark Corrigan is not going to be nominated.
Hey, you chumps may still owe me dinner, all right?
Oh, yeah, okay.
But no, let me tell you something. This is George W. Bush's grand stroke to, A, try and put Libby, which just happened, by the way, this past Friday, but to try and put Libby behind him and trying at the same time to re-rally his conservative base and gird their loins for war. Because they're expecting a war with the Democrats over Alito's nomination. I hope they get a war from the Democrats over Alito's nomination, because he shouldn't sit on the court.
We got a guy, Nick, in New Jersey, who says, what do you got to say about this, Nick?
Hey, Nick.
Thank you. I think, well, let's call him Sam the Scam. He's the distraction that, that can destroy the Republican right wing for the next 20, 30, 40 years if he gets on the court. Either way, we have to win. If we filibuster and win and pull over four or five Republicans, obviously that's a very deep wound to Bush's heart. If this guy gets on the court, the prospect of a Talibanistic Supreme Court will be enough to rally and motivate millions, tens of millions of Americans who aren't even involved in politics. We can change the bloody Constitution if we have to defang the Supreme Court that Bush appoints. So either way, this is a reason for us to take heart, not to be discouraged. We've got to fight this with everything we've got. If the Democrats don't fight this in the way that I'm describing it, then we've got to really start a third party.
Okay, thank you, Nick. That's some powerful words, and I think he's right on the money.
I don't disagree with him
about
that.
Yeah, I think he's right on the money, because even Senate Minority Leader Harry Reid said, look, you know, we're gonna fight this, especially if it was this guy.
He said there would be problems, and well, there ought to be.
And I'll tell you something. There is no clearer example of what Roe v. Wade means and what it defends against than what the hell this guy voted for, which is the very fact, the idea that men should have power over women's bodies, just the thing that he, the law that he was the sole dissenter on when they were trying to strike it down, which basically had a bit in there that said that women required, they are required to inform their husbands before getting an abortion. There couldn't be a more clearer example of women owning, men owning women's bodies. And this is exactly what Roe v. Wade is in place for, to protect against.
To some extent, this is a very scary thing to me because, I've always wondered about this whole notion that man had dominion over animals. And now you're starting to see people trying to go back to a time when men, the male sex, had dominion over women, and specifically over women's bodies, and specifically over women's reproductive rights.
Yes, and that's the thing that he dissented on could not be a more clear example. This has nothing to do with how long the pregnancy is along, whether there's state lines involved or minors involved. This is a very clear-cut thing that says a man's got a right to know the decision that his wife is going to make with her body legally, which is crap. I mean, the bottom line is, who the hell knows whether that guy raped her, whether she was raped, or whether she, you know, is just making a decision because she doesn't want to have his kid. Doesn't make any difference. It's her damn body, period. And this kind of a decision that this guy made on this should be shoved in his face during these confirmation hearings as an example that he is willing to legislate from the bench, that he is willing to be an ideologue and somebody who is not necessarily going to uphold the Constitution per se.
I'm going to be very curious to see how Samuel Alito skirts around some very direct questions I anticipate being asked by people like Chuck Schumer and others on the Judiciary Committee about the issue of Roe v. Wade, whether it's settled law, what is his view of the right to privacy, which is the basis on the foundation on which Roe v. Wade was built in the first place.
There you go. You know, today is Halloween. It's turning out to be a pretty scary day.
Yeah.
Honestly. And unfortunately, it's also that time of the week again when we here at Morning Sedition take a moment at this time of sorrow to reflect in our morning remembrance.
As the people of a grieving nation come together to mourn, to remember, and finally to find hope, Morning Sedition joins with them to mourn, remember, and find hope as well. And so we bring you the stories of those who have lost their lives, those who inspire us to carry on. Here now is Morning Sedition grief correspondent, Mort Mortensen.
One of those days, huh?
Trouble getting started, I'm Mort.
Must be Monday. Richard Smalley,
uh-huh.
Nobel Prize winner.
Professor Richard Smalley, who shared the 1996 Nobel Prize in Chemistry for discovering a new form of carbon called buckyballs, is dead after 9 frustrating years of trying to get people to pay attention to his discovery instead of snickering at the word buckyball. Smalley's discovery helped usher in a field of nanotechnology, and tragically, the screenplay for Agent Cody Blanks.
Really?
Yeah, a lot of references to nanotechnology.
Yeah, oh, okay.
Nanobots.
Good for you.
In a 1999 speech before the House of Representatives, Mark,
yeah,
Smalley said he believed the nanotechnology would revolutionize our lives. And to best symbolize this, he shortened his name from Richard Smalley to Dick Tiny.
Oh. Yeah.
He did that.
Yeah.
I read it in the Times.
It's catchier.
Yeah. Is you killing me? Smalley was also a pioneer in the development of supersonic beam laser spectroscopy. But buckyballs is a funny word, isn't it?
Yeah, it is funny, buckyballs. you need a Kleenex?
Yeah, you have any Kleenex?
Yeah, why don't you take one of these? Yeah, I'll take a few of them.
Yeah, right?
Oh. That sounded rewarding.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Smalley requested his body be reduced to the size of a dust mite and injected into the bloodstream of Robert Downey Jr.
That's interesting.
Len Dressler, voice of the Jolly Green Giant.
Oh.
Len Dressler, whose booming rendition of the Jolly Green Giant's Ho 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 inspired a whole generation of children to flee in fear at the sight of spinach, died last week in a Ho Ho hospice.
Ho Ho hospice.
If Dressler's voice was familiar to millions of TV viewers for over 40 years, so, too, was the image of a huge, green-skinned monster straddling the valley of an innocent community while terrified farmers gazed up in disgust at the perverse sight of that droopy asparagus spear and those two gigantic wrinkled peas dangling high above within a loosely fitted toga.
Yeah, that's making me cry.
Dressler was also a snap in the Snap, Crackle, Pop Rice Krispies trio. Until he started letting Yoko Ono hang out with him during the recording sessions. That was the end of that.
That was a lot of people blame her for that, too.
I'm still bitter about it. You know, he was also the voice of the Marlboro Man.
Yeah.
And the guy who sang, "When you're out of Schlitz, you're out of beer."
Yeah.
And after those gigs fell through, the guy you'd occasionally hear at your local bar yelling, "Who the hell you gonna to get a cigarette and a beer in the dump? Huh? You know who I am? Ho, ho."
Wow. Green Giant.
Later in life, Dressler often joked that thanks to the residuals from his ho, 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 his daughters didn't have to become ho, ho, hos.
Yeah.
Dressler requested that at that fleeting moment of perfect flavor, migrant farm workers cut off his niblets, freeze them in a light butter sauce, and then vacuum-pack them in flavor-tight pouches to retain their nutrients.
Yeah, yeah.
Or something funnier.
No, I liked it. He had a profound impact on my life.
Oh, I can tell that.
No, I mean, I remember those commercials. I remember the plastic bag with the peas, and they put it in the boiling water, and I wanted my mom to do it, and she said that fresh is better, and I insisted.
Yeah. You know, frozen vegetables have sometimes more nutrients than fresh vegetables, depending on how long it takes to get from the actual field into your kitchen.
Wow, this is turning into a completely different segment than it started.
What time is it?
I know, exactly. Well, thank you, Mort. Do you want to close this out in the usual way? Or?
Yeah. This has been this week's Morning Remembrance. Till next week, this is Mort Mortensen saying,
who's chopping onions? 17 past the hour. Morning Seditions. Air America's Morning Sedition. We're going to come back, and we're going to tell you about cloning pigs and super chickens. How does that grab you? And, of course, the Supreme Court nominee, who is Samuel A. Alito, Jr. Bad man. 17 past.
You got to keep them separated.
Hi, this is Reverend Barry Lynn from Americans United for Separation of Church and State, here to remind you that God and politics don't mix. That's why I get my God from the Good Book and my politics from Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Past the hour at Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hey.
In a few minutes, we're going to have Sandy Schlosser out here, author of Spooky New York, Tales of Haunting, Strange Happenings, and Other Local Lore. She's going to come into the studio and give us the lowdown on the scary stuff here in New York City.
Uh-oh.
Because it is Halloween, and I hope you don't mind that we have a Halloween-themed guest. It is a scary morning. Samuel A. Alito, Jr., that's Judge Sam to you. He sits on the Third Circuit Court of Appeals here in the U.S. in Philadelphia. He is on nickname Scalito for his judicial similarities to Antonin Scalia. Has been nominated by President Bush at around 8 o'clock today to be his newest nomination for the Supreme Court. This after the bungling of the Harriet Myers nomination. This, of course, only 2 days after Scooter Libby, Lewis Scooter Libby, Vice President Cheney's chief of staff, is indicted on 5 counts. This is, of course, after the fact that Bush is now in about, his approval rating is about 39%. No one likes the guy anymore, rightfully so. He's completely out of control in terms of, you know, what the country looks like at this point in time. You know, and also in the investigation, federal prosecutor Patrick Fitzgerald's investigation, this isn't over, folks. This is going to go on. That dude is one steadfast, you know, truth-seeking dude, man. You know, Scooter Libby is just a speed bump to the truth. That's all. This is happening now. He's either going to cut a deal and give Fitzgerald the information he wants, or Fitzgerald's going to keep plowing along on his own. He's already impaneled another grand jury. I got an email here that I think is pretty smart. Cheney publicly approves of torture. Wouldn't we get to the bottom of this with their own approved methods? They set the bar. I say that's fine. Torture Libby. He's already got something wrong with him. He's on crutches, I think, as a direct response to him being politically castrated and no longer being able to walk properly. But that's what's going on in the world. And this guy, Alito, Samuel Alito, is a bad guy, Riley.
He is a bad guy. He's a guy that is, in my judgment, going to try to reverse Roe v. Wade as one of his first priorities. And, of course, he is the darling of the religious right, which has wanted to gut Roe v. Wade essentially since 1973. And that's what you're going to see this court, I believe, take on. I think there is one case, one challenge to Roe v. Wade that may be in the not necessarily on the current Supreme Court's docket, but working its way up to the high court. And you're going to see probably, if this guy gets confirmed early next year, you're going to see the court take up the issue of Roe v. Wade.
I promised you genetically altered chickens. I'm going to give it to you.
Oh, God.
Scientists believe that a bird flu pandemic could be avoided if they genetically alter chickens to be resistant to the flu. They speculate if they could get approval for the transgenic chicken, they could replace the world's population of chickens fairly quickly, like in 4 or 5 years or something like that. The idea here is if the flu has nowhere to grow, it would just go away. So what is this? Is this just a step closer to transgenic humans? I mean, why don't they just... I mean, it seems like if they're going to do this to chickens to avoid the flu, why don't they just go ahead and modify us?
Hey, let me tell you something. Huh? This is a great ad for vegetarians. Where did Jim Earl go? Because I'm not eating no genetically altered chickens.
Dude,
I'm
you're
sorry.
Already eating genetically
I'm
altered
chickens.
I'm
talking about, like, totally genetically altered
Oh, my friend,
chickens.
You are eating little wads of antibiotic, you know, saturated flesh. The chickens you eat... They're you know, worse than transgenic, Riley. They're tortured. Their beaks are come off.
They're tortured?
They feed on their own poop. Come
oh,
on, wake
God,
up. Wake
God,
up. Enjoy
God.
That
Don't
chicken,
remind
Riley.
Me, man. Don't remind
oh,
me
I'm
about
waking
this
up.
Chicken.
Thank you.
Yeah, you ought to wake up, Chris, you and your chicken-eating freak showness. Listen, look, I never ate chicken. Even before I stopped eating meat, I rarely ate chicken. But I'll tell you something, man.
Chicken
I
mean, wings.
I'm not. No, I don't care.
Chicken
I'm
wings, baby.
Nothing. Ain't doing nothing. It's nothing. I stopped eating that chicken long ago because chicken's disgusting. And it's not the chicken's fault. It's just disgusting.
You notice chicken doesn't taste like chicken anymore?
It never does. That's the thing. It's because it's, you know what? They literally...
they do
chicken,
if it's buffalo wings.
No, a chicken is hatched, and they've shot it up with so much crap that it grows into a full chicken like in 7 hours. It's like instant chicken. Right when the egg... right when the egg breaks open, it's like... You hear that weird crackling noise that you hear when the Hulk is growing?
Yeah.
And it's a full-grown chicken in like 3 hours.
Well, what's to stop it from like growing into a chicken that can march up 6th Avenue here
they
in
kill
Manhattan?
It, and you... And
yourself eats it. You eat it yourself.
Me and myself?
I was going to say something bad, but I didn't.
Ah.
I was going to say something mean, but I realized, like, I never say mean things to Riley.
Thank
I stopped myself. But, oh, here's the other thing. Italian researchers that brought us the first cloned horse have announced the birth of 14 cloned piglets. Clone piglets.
Uh-huh.
I got three cats. I don't need 14 clone pigs. Would someone take two of my cats? You know, here's the deal. Someone just wrote me and said, you can't get rid of the cats. They're attached to you. My husband and I have nine cats. We wouldn't trade them for anything. They are attached to me, but I didn't suckle them or anything. They hated me. They barely like me now, but they're good. They're socialized. Please, I just want to find a good home for maybe one. I know I'm going to end up with all three of these when I go back to L.A. Damn it. All right. We've got spooky New York stories. Sandy Schwasher is going to be here in a second. Stay with us. And we'll also do a little news because I know some of you like that. 27 past Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Thirty-four past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey,
it's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. In just a minute, we're going to talk to Sandy Schwasser about her book, "Spooky New York: Tales of Haunting, Strange Happenings, and Other Local Lore," in honor of Halloween. But first, I want to tell you that Bush's guy, the new pick, the new nomination for Supreme Court Justice Samuel A. Alito Jr., Judge Sam. He is the United States Court of Appeals judge for the Third Circuit in Philadelphia. He has an ideological judicial likeness to Antonin Scalia, which has given him the nickname Scalito. He is very anti-abortion, which can be seen in his he was a sole dissenter in the Third Circuit's decision in Planned Parenthood Planned Parenthood versus Casey, which struck down a Pennsylvania law requiring women to inform their husbands before getting an abortion. Of course, Bush did this rapidly on the literally on the coattails of Libby being indicted. Scooter Libby, Vice President Cheney's chief of staff, was indicted on Friday. So this is the way to distract, because now we're going to have a media full of Sam Alito Jr. for at least a few days.
Well, yeah, and everyone who's ever known Sam Alito will be on television or on radio before day's end.
And even people that don't know him arguing about him.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, a lot of that. So if you want to see ghosts and find out the scariest places to go in New York City to celebrate Halloween tonight, we have the guest for you. Sandy Schwasser is the author of Spooky New York, Tales of Haunting, Strange Happenings, and Other Local Lore. She joins us in the studio this morning. Good morning, Sandy.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Nice to see you. Look, you know, I have always thought that New York can always be a scary place. I remember there was a different point in my life where I would see ghosts, but they were usually down on the Lower East Side, and they were just ghosts of people whose dreams had died, not literally died. So what is probably the most, you know, the most popularized ghost sighting or tale here in New York City?
Probably the one from the Empire State Building.
Oh, what's that
one? There is a ghost who haunts the observatory. She was a woman in the 1940s who had a fiancé who was killed over in World War II.
Huh.
And so she actually committed suicide from the top of the Empire State Building, and she's still seen sometimes in the observatory just walking around and sort of fretting the way she probably did before she she died. And some people have actually seen her ghost fling herself right off the building. It freaks people out terribly. But she's very famous.
Really happens.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, people see the ghost. That's mind blowing. I think I've seen a couple of ghosts in my life, but I don't know if they were ghosts or just flickerings of this. Have you seen a ghost personally?
I haven't seen a ghost personally. My sister has.
Really?
Her story is actually going to be in the new book that I have coming out, Spooky New Jersey. And yes, sorry. Yeah, I know. Most people say that's redundant. And
yeah, right.
Spooky
but I grew
New Jersey.
Up in New Jersey, so I can't say too much.
He's from Jersey.
I live in Jersey.
I was born in Jersey.
Too. Yeah.
I was born and raised in Jersey myself.
Well, tip us the story.
My sister went to Blair's Den, which is a big old house that has a reputation of having many ghosts. The stories that go around about it is that it was sold to nuns, and that one of the mother's superiors went insane and killed everybody off. It's just one of those really scary stories.
That's
and
a
then
true
she,
thing?
No, real. That particular story is not.
Hey, okay.
This nuns actually lived there.
Okay.
And there probably was actually a murder.
I don't think
it was a mass murder.
Yeah.
But the story is that the ghost of the Mother Superior is still there, and she's very angry, and so she still tries to lure people in. Well, my sister had a boyfriend at that point in time who was interested in buying the house, but he was also interested in scary things, and he didn't tell her a thing about the house.
Right.
Just said sometime, you know, late one evening, hey, let's just run down and take another quick look at the house. She'd never been there before. And it's one of those really spooky places, huge mansion, terraces going all the way up. So they're going up the terraces, and my sister's getting freaked out just because it's a scary-looking place anyway.
Yeah.
And she won't go near the house, so she stayed on the last terrace and was looking around, and she saw a figure actually appear, a glowing figure in the window up at the top. And it was just a split-second thing. Just for a moment, it was there, and then it was gone. And she, you know, she turned her eyes away to call her boyfriend to show him, you know, like, what the heck is that thing up there? And it was gone. And she took one, and she just said, okay, we're out of here. And she started running. And her boyfriend's following her, and her boyfriend had and his friend were discussing this fact that there was these keys, and like, was that your keys sounding? And they're going back and forth. And there's apparently somebody inside the house tracking the guys as they walked along the terrace, and they could hear the keys rattling.
And then they said, I think the mushrooms are kicking in.
Yes. But my sister, it's so funny. She still turns very pale. She doesn't tell very many
really,
people the
really
stories.
Got her,
she just, yeah.
Now, are most of the stories that you talk about in your book situations where there have been multiple sightings and during a certain period of time? In other words, is it just one person who's seen most of these apparitions, or are there large numbers of people who've all seen the same thing?
Yeah.
Over the years, on a lot of them, it's been multiple people. Again, I collect folk tales. So some of these are basically hokum. I mean, they're stories that have developed, like somebody got scared once and then told a really good story, and then they embellished it. Things like high hat is considered part of the stone giants from the Seneca. This is up in the...
What is that? What did I just miss?
High hat is actually from the Western Tier region near Rochester.
Okay. Yeah.
And he is supposed to be a stone giant. And they were flesh-eating stone giants. And this is the one remaining one who haunts all the swamps.
Oh, okay.
So that's an old-fashioned folktale that's risen up. And so... because it's folklore as opposed to true ghost stories, I get a chance to tell some of the scary folk tales as well as the true ghost stories. But people like the Galloping Hessian from Tarrytown, Sleepy Hollow, that's been cited many times, and that particular ghost was cited many times before Washington Irving ever wrote about
it.
Really? Yes.
And that's a great movie, by the way, Sleepy Hollow. It's one of my favorite.
Oh, Legend of Sleepy Hollow.
I love it. I think it's a masterpiece, that Tim Burton film. But that's neither here nor there. Tell me about this one kind of intrigues me because it sounds really creepy, the Ellis Island ghosts.
The Ellis Island ghosts. Yes, that was this is back when Ellis Island was actually used as a place where they hung prisoners, as an example. When the British took over, they were trying to really clean up a lot of the mess with the mutineers and the pirates and people who were just not really good citizens.
Yeah.
And so often, once they had captured people, they would hang them on hang them from the trees in Ellis Island and leave their bodies there. And so what happens in this particular story is that there's a guy who turns pirate over in Communipal, which is right across the river in New Jersey.
Yeah.
And so he's raiding many of the settlements up and down the whole entire region. And so he always goes back to his dad's inn in New Jersey, in Communipal, which is like the Jersey City area. And so the British raided them and captured not the ringleader, but some of his men, and hung them on Bedloe Island. And so the men one evening got caught in a storm and hid out right below where the bodies of their companions were. And the guy actually invited them to dinner. He was like trying to be a brave...
The ghosted?
Type. The pirate leader.
Okay.
And he was kind of being challenged by the fact that he was acting kind of scared and weepy in front of these dead men. So he actually stood up in the boat and invited them to dinner. And then when the storm went, they went back to the inn, and the men were actually there. The ghosts of the men were in the inn, you know, toasting, and they had their chains and everything. And so he was so scared, he actually backed out of the room and fell down the stairs and broke his neck.
Didn't have to hang him, huh?
No, he didn't have to be hung. But he and his men are supposed to still haunt Ellis Island.
Well, that's wild. So it's interesting because with a book like this, because it has to deal with folk tales and also, you know, hauntings and obviously a little bit of history of the region. What about current ghosts? I mean, I've been to CBGB's. That place seems full of them. How about the Chelsea Hotel? That seems a little scary.
Oh, yeah.
Does the ghost of Sid Vicious show up every once in a while and ask people if they got any dope?
You know, there is a ghost of the poet Dylan Thomas, who is actually supposed to haunt the White Horse Tavern.
Sure, sure.
Oh, yeah.
Didn't he die at the Chelsea or he died at the White House?
He died at the White Horse.
But he used to live at the Chelsea.
He used to live at the Chelsea.
Yeah. So I heard that Dylan Thomas occasionally gets drunk at the White Horse and says, you know, tells people to listen to him for a few hours. Is that possible? What else? What are some scary places? If you're out, like we had a Wiccan call us, and there's some people that still that look at ghosts as an invitation and a practical way to practice their religion, perhaps, or to engage in some sort of ritual, not necessarily the Wiccans. But if you're out tonight, where should people go that's really scary and try to summon up the dead?
Well, I have a couple of restaurants if you're not wanting to summon up the dead at the same time you're eating. The Manhattan Bistro in Spring Street has the ghost of a female who was drowned in a well that was underneath that property. And they think it was a murder, but it was never solved. So they think her ghost continues to come
back. How long
back.
Ago was that? When was it?
That was about 100 years ago.
Okay.
So an older ghost.
Now, there's Liberty Island. People can go there, and there's supposedly who's buried there in terms of who's the ghost there? Anybody?
It's Vanderskamp and his men. It's a pirate.
Okay,
oh, no,
there you go.
Liberty Island. That's Ellis Island. Liberty Island, Captain Kidd actually buried treasure there. So it's one of his men who was murdered to guard the treasure.
Okay, what about the Bronx? Anything up there for our Bronx listeners?
In the Bronx, there was the rising of Gouverneur Morris. And Gouverneur Morris has, in that whole Morrisiana area, that was his property.
So his ghost
supposedly hangs out there, especially in the St. Anne's Church.
Yeah. And there's still a Morris Avenue in the Bronx, too. That's named after him.
All right, so that maybe he drives along that, or maybe he can be seen hanging from the stoplight. Crystal Presto lives in Staten Island. What do you got for him? Anything out in Staten Island?
Richmondtown has a ghost right in the churchyard.
Yeah, I wonder if it hangs out with the ghosts of Chris's past love life.
She is a lady ghost. She is the gray lady, and she actually
I hope this isn't her love life
because what she did was she was a terrible flirt, and she got two men to fight a duel over her, and they killed each other.
Typical woman.
So, and her ghost hangs out in the churchyard, actually repenting.
I think
Chris,
are you trying to? Wait, you want to be out of work too? Nothing.
Lord.
Well, basically, what I'm saying is maybe you know Chris is without a girlfriend. Is there any chance that this ghost would maybe?
I can do better than a dead woman.
I think that saying dead woman is putting it the wrong way. Ghost is, I think, a little hotter.
Well, she is supposed to be very pretty.
See that? A pretty ghost.
Oh, yeah, how pretty? You have a picture?
It's funny. You'd probably go out there for a couple of weeks and decide you didn't want to anymore.
Honestly, she'd probably end it with me.
You're probably right. Yeah. You'd probably disappoint her somehow.
I got one question for you because I've heard this story before and I've never been able to get it verified. There was supposedly a ghost that haunted the theater district that was connected to the Fatty Arbuckle case. Have you ever heard that?
No, I don't know that one. I know several ghosts from the theater district.
From the theater district, yeah.
I cannot believe the seriousness of this conversation that is happening in front of me. You know, Riley's like, yeah, I think from the Fatty Arbuckle thing. And she's like, no, but there were several other ghosts. I'm like, come on, Sandy, let's be honest. I mean, do you believe this stuff?
Do I believe in ghosts? You know?
For the sake of the book, I would say yes. I don't know if you have a publicist.
Well, you know what? It's because of people like my sister, who are very down to earth and don't like to talk about it, who have had those kind of encounters, that I find myself kind of teetering on the edge of believing on ghosts. I know that there's many things like miracles and angels that we've seen happen in true life, and a lot of what is really important to us, like thought and love, it can't be seen and can't be really measured in the same way scientific things are. So I find myself actually believing them when they tell me about ghosts. Now, I have, like, the paranormal ability of, like, a 2x4, okay? Yeah. A ghost is just never going to appear to me.
Yeah.
But,
Are you saying that ghosts are they just want nothing to do with you?
You know what? I've had one of those really spooky dreams that really came true, and actually that's ending up in Spooky New Jersey too because it was really freaky. But it wasn't anything to do with a ghost. I just had a dream that the devil came to a party, and then the next night I actually was driving past a park, and there, like a spider in a web, there was a man sitting in one of those park vehicles, and it was the man from my dream. I mean, and if you could feel evil being pulsing from someone, that's what the feeling was like.
I used to see that all the time in Hollywood. I used to party with those guys. Did you stop? I mean, say,
no,
excuse me,
say
are you Satan? Because I'd like to, no questions?
No, I was actually pretty freaked.
Okay, all right. But, the book is Spooky New York. Our guest has been Sandy Schlosser, so you want to pick that up or go to any of the locations tonight and try to commune with a ghost, or just go to the Lower East Side and see the ghosts of dreams and people who swore to God they weren't going to get hooked. They're living dead or walking all over the Lower East Side. 47 past the hour. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Stay with us. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Morning Sedition, delivering you from evil in 3 hours or less. Air America Radio.
All right, it's 52 past the hour. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hey.
Morning Sedition will return to O'Neill's Restaurant for our last live performance, people. If you've been a fan of the show, a fan of ours, come see our last live performance this Thursday, November 3rd at O'Neill's on West 64th Street between Broadway and Central Park West. Thank you for all the emails of support. As I said before, there's going to be something in this slot. It's just not going to include me in the same respect that it has previous. I should be around for a few more weeks doing my job the best I can and making the show funny and entertaining. But there will come an announcement soon as to what the new show is going to look like. I'm trying to get rid of some cats. I love my cats. That's the wrong way to put it. I have been asking people if they would provide a good home for my cat. I just got an email here that says I might be interested. Do the cats bite? Roy Horn, Las Vegas, Nevada. yeah. Also, I got an interesting email about my description of Scooter Libby, Vice President Cheney's chief of staff, being politically castrated, and that's why he's on crutches. Someone wrote, castrated and can't walk properly. What was lopped off? The balls of his feet. Love you guys. Well, you know, as you know, if you're castrated, it's going to be a little difficult. You're not going to be able to really walk properly. Also, if you don't know, folks, Samuel A. Alito Jr., that's Judge Samuel A. Alito Jr. of the State Court of Appeals for the Third Circuit in Philadelphia, has now been nominated by George Bush to be the new Supreme Court Justice. He's going to go through a pretty nasty confirmation hearing. Hopefully, Democrats will filibuster this, will fight this, and keep fighting over and over and over again until they get exhausted. Look, Bush is injured here. His approval ratings are 39%. We're coming off of him losing Scooter Libby, who was an advisor to the president, by the way, along with the chief of staff for the vice president and many other titles. But he's injured desperately, and now this bought him a little time because now we're going to have to see at least a week or 4 days of Samuel A. Alito coverage in the media. Now, this is the guy who was the sole dissenter in the Third Circuit's decision in Planned Parenthood versus Casey, which struck down a Pennsylvania law requiring women to inform their husbands before getting an abortion. The majority's decision was upheld by the Supreme Court, and this is the kind of guy this guy is. He's a political activist. He will legislate from the bench. He may be a conservative, but it's clear where his heart stands.
He is. This is just speculation on my part, but I believe that Alito will vote to either water down or eventually eliminate Roe v. Wade.
Yes.
I mean, I think there's no doubt about that. Now, that's leaving aside, of course, other questions of substance that the Supreme Court will rule on that could have the effect of curtailing our basic rights as Americans.
Okay, there you go. So look, folks, have a happy Halloween. Be careful. Don't eat any razor blades and apples. Don't eat any pins and apples. Don't eat any bad candy. Try not to take any bad drugs. Oh, my God, I forgot to tell the story about the one time I was tripping on Halloween. I guess that's going to have to wait till another year or perhaps another radio show. Folks, I do want to tell you that in relation to the decisions being made here at Air America, I did what I could to keep this show together. Look, here, it's time for this week's liberal agenda. Here's the facts from the Streisand compound giving us a rundown of their marching orders. One, excuse any Wiccan and or warlock employee who chooses to take today off as religious observance, of course. Two, as treats, give kids the most recent government statistics about childhood obesity. They'll thank you later.
Wow. That's going to be a sad fat kid moment. All right, three. Carve unhappy faces on your pumpkins this Halloween to bring attention to man's cruelty to pumpkins. Cruelty to pumpkins. Hello. What do I got to do here? Four. If you're going to a Halloween party, dress as superhero Patrick Fitzgerald. Five. If you live in a Republican neighborhood, dress your kid up as Patrick Fitzgerald. Oh, boy, there's another sad kid. What? Patrick, who? Mom, come on. I don't want to wear a tie. All right. Today's phrase, just drop it into conversation. It's not just trick-or-treating. Wake up, sheeple. Halloween is all about the redistribution of candy from the property classes to clandestine activists. Every mini Snickers bar dropped into a bag is a validation of the Marxist dialectic. There you go.
Man. Uh-oh.
Wow, we got a little time here.
You were tripping, Mark, at Halloween?
There you go. Yeah, one time me and my buddy Lance, we took mushrooms before we made a decision about costumes. So they were really half-baked.
Oh,
they were just
man.
Sort of, we didn't know what we were, really. We just threw on these weird jackets and greased our hair up and just went as rockabilly people. But then that whole guy, we ended up in the basement of an apartment building, and someone pulled the fire alarm, and we were putting these giant pipe ends on our heads, walking around tripping, you know, but we were by ourselves. You know those curves from ventilation pipes, like the elbow
joints. You probably
joints.
Shouldn't have it on your head. It's probably got insulation and stuff.
No, it looked like we were spacemen. And then the fireman came to investigate the fire alarm. We were like, we're spacemen. All right. Happy Halloween, Riley.
And you're still free, huh?
Yeah.
Happy Halloween to you, Mark Maron. Tomorrow we've got author Peter Guralnick, Sir Richard Branson, and Chris Elliott, Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.